I feel like having an awesome animal nickname is the best way to go. Tiger Woods, Big Cat, Black Mamba, when random people call me Big Dog. So I feel like going by Hippopotamus Kaminsky from here on out. Hippo for short. Thanks for your time.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast, brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd, and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. And you can find me on Twitter, as always, at redrock_bball. Today, we're going to be doing the first of a short series of podcasts, looking at players on teams in the NBA who might be worth looking at from a dynasty perspective, not looking at necessarily the obvious candidates, some guys who may have impressed in limited showing and what that might mean for 2, 3, 4 years down the track. We're going to be starting with the Southeast Division today. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
The Southeast Division, of course, containing the Atlanta Hawks, the Charlotte Hornets, the Miami Heat, the Washington Wizards, and the Orlando Magic. So some obvious names in that group in terms of players that immediately come to your mind, but I'm going to try and touch on some other not so obvious guys as well to pay some attention to. And we will start with the Atlanta Hawks. Of course, the number one guy there is Trae Young, who had a fantastic last 3, 4 months of the season and looks to be set up to be a consistent top 30, probably top 20 fantasy guy for the next 7 to 8 years, maybe even longer. This is a guy that put up top 25 numbers for the final third of the season, the final half of the season. He ended up around a top 60 guy overall. And you think with growth coming into his game, better scoring, efficiency going up, steal rate perhaps increasing for Young, he could be a consistent top 20 guy. Everyone knows about Trae Young. Everyone knows his dynasty potential. So there's not really a stash type of guy that fits what we're looking to do here. The guy that I do want to talk about is someone who I've talked about quite a bit this season, but in plenty of dynasty leagues, he won't be rostered, and that is Fantapants Kevin Huerter, who started a big chunk of the season for the Atlanta Hawks. He had his moments where I thought he could be a top 100 player. It didn't necessarily go that way, although the last 2 weeks of the year, he was the 74th ranked player of the season. Of course, that's in complete nonsense time of the year, and he did that while shooting 56% from three. A number which is unsustainable. Over the course of the year, he played 27 minutes a game, and he was the 171st ranked player over the course of the season. So he probably is going to be rostered in majority of dynasty leagues, but in others, they won't see the same thing in Huerter that I do. So while he might not be a free agent in a lot of leagues, he might be able to get him at a decent price in a trade, where people might be looking at him as just a Wayne Ellington type of a player, someone who comes in and bangs in threes. You compare him to, say, Landry Shamet on the Clippers, I have heard a considerably higher in terms of overall dynasty value. And that's because I think he can do a few more things. Now, this season, he only averaged 9.7 points. He shot 42 and 33 from the field and from the line, but he did hit 38% of his threes, which is key as a rookie. The advanced numbers did really like him as well. For a rookie to post a PIPM of just negative 0.27, which for reference is better than Trae Young, and to have, he came in third on the Hawks in terms of Jacob Goldstein's wins added metric behind the Baptist John Collins and the Undertaker Dwayne Dedman, that's a good basis for him being a guy that, now, it doesn't always, in a lot of cases, PIPM and wins added can translate into good fantasy numbers, but what it generally will translate into is players getting minutes and getting consistent minutes as their career moves forward. And I think that's going to be the case with Huerter. Now, he does have range in his game to be able to do a few things. He can generate steals. He only got 1.2 steals per 36, but I think that can improve. He averaged almost 4 assists per 36 minutes. And wing players getting assists at that sort of rate is not a common thing. So I think we could see him have seasons of 4.5, 5 assists per game, which obviously improves his value. And he hit just 1.8 threes per game over the course of the season, attempting 4.7 threes per game. What I want to see him do is get that number up to 6 or 6.5 threes per game. He can bang in 2.5 to 2.6 threes a game, but that's just not all his game is. I could see him being a 16 or 17 point per game scorer, averaging 5 rebounds and 4 assists with 1.3, 1.4 steals. And I think the top 50 is maybe a little bit too high for Huerter in the next 4 years, but I think he can have a couple of top 100 seasons. And I wouldn't be stunned to see him come out from the beginning of next year, play 32 minutes a night, and be a consistent top 100 player from next season onwards. So he's the guy that I look at that might be a little bit undervalued by others. Other guys to have a look at from a dynasty point of view. On this team, of course, you had the Wizard Omari Spellman, who I wasn't massively keen on. I do think that he will struggle to get consistent starting minutes. Now, he can put up numbers in bunches, but he doesn't do it consistently enough. I'm not that big on him. I'm not big on Tyler Dorsey, who had a pretty good run down the stretch. He was only 22, so there's something there in terms of age for him. I'm not totally sold on him as a player. Of course, I'm not really going to talk about the Baptist, John Collins, and Trey Young, who are locked in as top 50, probably top 40, and Young's case, top 20 guys for many years to come. The other one who is interesting, who the advanced numbers do like, is DeAndre Bembry. Kent Bazemore, unlikely to be on this team, I would think, this time next season. You could see Bembry's playing time and production going up. After that, he played all 82 games this year. He averaged 1.3 steals and half a block. He hit his threes at only 29%, but at least he took some more threes this season as opposed to what he's done in the past. So he's another interesting one, although I think his ceiling is relatively limited, but I do see a larger role for DeAndre Bembry coming next season. Next, we have a look at the Charlotte Hornets. I think the name that stands out here is pretty obvious in terms of it being Miles Bridges, who started down the stretch of this season and helped the Charlotte Hornets push themselves right into the mix of the playoffs, just missed out on that last game of the day. But he was a guy who did take some big steps forward after really struggling for the majority of the season. But this is a team that does lack in foundational pieces, in upside type guys. And I'm probably going to spend more time here talking about why I don't like certain guys versus why I do. Let's talk about a guy like Malik Monk, who possibly is in contention to be that guy. He had a really poor second season. His rookie season was terrible as well, outside of the final 10 games of the year. He ended up playing in 73 games this year, which is a step forward, in 17 minutes, but shot just 39 from the field and 33% from three. His playmaking went down, just 1.6 assists per game, whereas that was something that really stepped up at the end of last year. They didn't play him at point guard as much this season. No steals, no blocks, limited rebounding numbers. He doesn't get to the line all that much. His advanced stuff, it doesn't really paint him in a great picture as well. Really negative PIPM, one of the worst on the team, not contributing to much in wins. Now, he's still 20 years of age, Malik Monk, so I guess there is some upside there with him. I don't really see it in a huge way, though, for Monk. So let's talk about Miles Bridges, who at 21 years of age is like a month younger than Malik Monk. So again, Monk is still really young, if we're going to look at it that way. Bridges played played in 80 games this season, 21 minutes a night, started down the stretch and started putting up some pretty significant numbers. And over the last month of the year, he played 30 minutes a game and was the 77th ranked player, averaging 10, 6, and 2.5. But it was the efficiency combined with the defense that really brought that rank up. 51% shooting, 80% from the line, 1.3 steals, and 0.8 blocks. And that's what really needs to be focused on. Now, was that a hot streak in terms of shooting? Well, probably a little bit. Not from three, but from two-point range, where he shot 61% on his twos. He was at 55 over the course of the season, but he still shot 46 and 75 over the course of the entire season. So still really efficient as a wing rookie to be shooting at that sort of a level. I worry that his lack of playmaking might be an issue, but again, over the last six games, he averaged 3.2 assists. The Hornets weren't shutting guys down. They weren't playing end-of-season bullshit basketball like so many teams do. They were trying to push for the playoffs, and Bridges was a big part of that. And over those last six games, he averaged over a triple one, 10, 5, and 3 with a triple, 1.2 steals, and 1.5 blocks. And that's where his value is going to be. Now, out of the Bridgeses, I still prefer McCall Bridges to Miles Bridges. But if Miles is going to bring these defensive numbers in this sort of volume, which he did, you know, to a degree this season, averaging over a steal and over a block per 36, the steal numbers probably need to be bumped up from him. But the block numbers for a wing, a starting shooting guard type player, are impressive. So there is something there for Bridges. The advanced stuff doesn't love him. The PIPM, very similar to what Monk was able to do. But over that second half of the season, you know, Bridges was able to do, it was obviously really impressive being able to step up and be a positive on the court for this team as they were pushing towards the playoffs. In terms of other guys who might be stash options, I'm against the idea of Dwayne Bacon being a stash. I don't really see much in him in terms of his fantasy game. Yeah, he was one of those starters along with Bridges that helped push this team into playoff consideration. The team was about a neutral in terms of on-off numbers. As for Bridges, he was a -5. So, but that's over the course of the season. This is Bacon's second season as well. His advanced stuff, his PIPM is even worse than both Monk and Bridges. And he's a guy that to me is just a whole lot of shooting and not much else. He averaged 7 points per game with one assist and two rebounds in his 18 minutes. Negligible steal and block numbers in that time as well. I think that's what's always going to hold Bacon back from being a good option. The other name that I look at as a deeper dynasty stash is Devontae Graham. I really liked what I saw for Devontae down the stretch. Again, some of his advanced numbers aren't great, but he took that backup point guard role away from Tony Parker to end the season, and that's a pretty big step for a guy like that. He leapt over Malik Monk for backup point guard and backup shooting guard minutes, which I thought was really impressive considering him as a second round guy. He is 24, so I guess that does put a little bit of a dent on his overall value. But he was able to look at least decently impressive, averaging 4 assists per game over the final 13 games of the season. Yes, he shot 29.7% from the field and 21% from three there, which is always going to be a big holdback for him. But we see large leaps from players, usually hitting from their first into their second season. So I could see that improving for Graham. So he's a bit of a deeper stash guy. Kemba Walker might not be on this team next season. Who knows what's going to happen with Tony Parker? Do they strike out in free agency? Do they get a point guard? They might be picking at pick 13 or 14 in the draft. So I don't think a rookie point guard picked at that spot is going to be anointed as the opening day starter. Will they put Malik Monk in there? Will it be Devontae Graham? I think he's got a massive chance, and it's not greater than 50%. I think he's got a massive chance, though, to be a top 150 guy less next season, just with all those movements there in Charlotte if they don't get a free agent point guard. And look, they might get some middling point guard. I'm trying to think of a name who could be available for them. Patrick Beverley, although he's better than middling, but that sort of a level of player could come in and start worse than Beverley. Let's go. Worse than Beverley could come in as a free agent and start, and then Graham takes over after a month or so. I could see that being the case, and them going with a Graham, Bridges, Bacon type setup, or even if Monk steps up and he starts with Jeremy Lamb as the sixth man there. So Graham's the name to watch there, although a lot of his indicators aren't great, and that shooting obviously was terrible as the season went on. I do have to tell you guys about the great people over at Wyze. Wyze is the indoor camera that does it all. It's packed with premium features allowing you to see everything from anywhere for just $20. 1080p full HD, images so clear you won't miss a thing. Night vision, two-way audio. You get Wyze as that indoor camera to check whatever you want. You can get their free rolling 14-day cloud storage. No subscriptions. Use it to check up on whatever you want. Growth of plants, herb garden in your kitchen. Check on your babysitter, looking after your kids. Whatever it is that you want to pay attention to, you can set it up wherever you want because Wyze costs just $20. And if you go to wyze.com, wyze.com/locked, you will get the guaranteed lowest price. That's wyze.com/locked to get that guaranteed lowest price on the Wyze indoor camera, just $20. All right, let's move on to the next team that we are going to talk about now. We're looking at the Miami Heat, a team which, again, they looked much like the Hornets. There's not a huge amount there in the hopper in terms of future value. It is a little bit of a tough one to work out where this team's headed with long-term contracts, guys locked into to value, all that sort of stuff can be a little bit tough on looking at this squad. But when I'm looking at it, the number one guy we want to talk about is Bam Adebayo.
Bam! 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 Bam!
Adebayo took over as the starting center for Hassan Whiteside in the second portion of the season. He played really well in that area, and I have absolutely zero doubt that he will be the starting center for this team next season. He had a massive on-offer, plus 4.5, second on the team behind Kelly Olynyk, interestingly enough, equal with Justice Winslow. When you look at Whiteside, he was a negative 1.6 as well. So that Adebayo-Olynyk front court really was quite a positive for this squad. Fourth on the team with wins added behind Richardson, Winslow, and Whiteside, interestingly enough, because of his massive defensive PIPM. But Bam had strong defensive stuff, good offensive PIPM as well. That does need some work there with Adebayo on the offensive end, averaging just 9 points per game this season. But you can see the basis of what he can do, generating steals, blocks, assists is something that he can, I think, really work on and get that up, rebounding, solid free throws, solid field goal percentage, a guy that I think is going to be pushing top 50 for many years to come. In fact, over the last 2 months of the season, in 26 minutes a game, he was the 67th ranked player, rebounding, steals, blocks, field goal percentage without hurting your free throw percentage, and average assist numbers. They are all real positives for Bam. Again, I don't know if people realize how good of a player that he can become. I think that what we saw from him is tip of the iceberg stuff. When you're talking about a guy like Adebayo, who over that last 2 months of the season is the 67th ranked guy averaging 11 points, I think he can push to 15 points. I think it can be a 15-9 with 3.5 assists, 1.3 blocks, 1.1 steals. I think that's possible for Adebayo on really, really strong efficiency numbers, pushing him into that top 50, dare I say top 40, top 30 numbers. At the start of the year, I had him as a guy that I thought could push into the top 50, top 25 at some point in the next 6 years. And I don't think that seems too crazy at the moment. That's sort of where he's going towards. So he is an interesting guy in that regard. Of course, he's going to be rostered in all leagues. But again, we're talking about guys that you might be able to get at that cheaper value. If we're looking for someone who isn't rostered in a lot of leagues as a rookie, a player that we didn't see a huge amount of for Miami this season. Interestingly enough, because I thought they'd like to use him a little bit more, is Yonte Mattan, who played for their G League team. And I thought that put up really good G League numbers, averaging 23.5 points with 10 rebounds, 1.2 blocks and a steal. So these are all sort of very Bam Adebayo-ish type numbers. He shot 33% on threes, but he did take almost 4 attempts per game. That's a positive to me. Hit his free throws at 78%, 61% on his twos. Defensively, he does have some struggles, but I think that Yonte Mattan is a guy that, depending if what they do with the Kelly Olynyk contract, which could be moved on really at any point, or they'd like to really, I think, get off Olynyk at some point, given how much money he's owed, I think that Mattan could be a very, very interesting player. Yeah, down the track, we don't get much of a sample size. He played like 13 total minutes for the Heat this season, and his advanced numbers came out relatively neutral. But he is a name that I would be looking at in those deeper dynasty leagues, looking to stash someone. He was a two-way guy this year. The Heat have had tremendous success in developing these type of players, and Mattan is just the next guy in that line of players who I think could push up. Think your Josh Richardson second-round pick, Tyler Johnson, Hassan Whiteside, Scooter Magruder, a whole bunch of these players that are able to develop reclamation projects like James Johnson. And the other guy I want to talk about as a stash is Derek Jones Jr., who I thought put together. Look, I was out on this guy as a member of the Phoenix Suns. I thought he does nothing apart from dunk. He can't shoot. He doesn't defend. He can't pass. He took massive steps forward. He is still just 21 years of age. His advanced numbers were relatively positive for this team. I liked what he was able to do. He does go missing a bit, and it's going to require a little bit of a thinning of the rotation, but I think some big changes might be happening in Miami. We already know that Wade's out of the rotation, so there's 26 minutes gone. What happens with Waiters? What happens with Olynyk? What happens with James Johnson? There's going to be some tough decisions made by Pat Riley in terms of trades there, and there they do have some faith. Actually, Jones is 22 at the moment. He's just turned 22. Sorry about that. But his ability in 19 minutes per game to average 0.8 steals and 0.7 blocks is huge. Threes are always going to be a problem with his shooting, but as a guy that can get some rebounds and put up defensive stats, he's a player who is going to be available in quite a lot of dynasty formats that I think you need to be paying some attention to. If we go on to the next team now, I want to look at the Orlando Magic and their dynasty stash potential with guys. They are obviously the only team in this division who made the playoffs, taking game one off the Toronto Raptors in what I guess most people would consider somewhat of a surprise. The obvious name here on this list for the Magic is my man, John Isaac. Myself and Kyle McEwen talked about our preseason projections on yesterday's podcast, and we talked about how we got it a bit wrong with Isaac, but I still think what we saw from him was tremendously encouraging. Really strong defensive PIPM, overall positive on this team, fifth in the team in terms of wins added, fifth out of all the starters, no doubt, but that's still ahead of Terrence Ross, who had a really strong season as a sixth man of the year candidate. The team was a big positive with him on the court, a plus 1.6. You compare that to Aaron Gordon, who was a negative 5.1 on off. That's pretty disappointing from Gordo there. Isaac able to keep things flowing. Now, I think his best position is at the four or even at the five rather than the three. But with the way that Vucevic played and the investment in Aaron Gordon, it might be hard for him to find that spot next season or even the season after. But I believe John Isaac is a multiple season top 50 fantasy guy. And if people invested in him this season, they might be disappointed. So getting him at that cheaper rate is something to look at. Now, Mo Bamba's the other guy you could consider.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
He looks so far away from it for me this year. That leg injury ended his year. He did average 1.4 blocks in 16 minutes. He didn't shoot well from the field, from the floor, didn't hit threes. He looked out of position defensively. He rebounded okay, but nothing spectacularly good there. Doesn't get assists or steals. He looked very much like a Hassan Whiteside type of a fantasy guy, which Whiteside, when he was on his game, was an excellent fantasy guy. But that's because he was playing 30 minutes a night and blocking 3.5 shots. And I don't think Bamba gets to that level. Now, he can shoot the three a bit more than Whiteside. So me saying that I'm not sure about him if he's a Whiteside player, that doesn't mean that he is Whiteside or that he can get to that level. And so that's the way his game looks. And it needs a lot of things to go right. He needs to be a 15 rebound per game guy, a 3.5 blocks per game guy, a 68% field goal percentage guy. And I don't think he'll be any of those things. I think he's going to be on the negative side of where Whiteside lands. The team really struggled with him on the court, and negative 16.2 is atrocious. Terrible offensive PIPM. Overall PIPM was not good at all for him. Really, really poor stuff from Mo Bamba. So I'm not massively into him. The other guys that you look at on this team, I thought we saw some flashes in the G League from Troy Copain. We didn't see much of him in the actual NBA. Only played 16 minutes. He's a deep league name to watch there. Melvin Frazier didn't do much to get me excited, but I think that out of, say, him and Weza Wundu, Frazier's the guy that I'd be looking at for those deeper dynasty formats to at least put some investment in. Now, he only played 10 games, 4.5 minutes a game, averaged one point on 33% shooting, didn't generate any defensive numbers, but I still like what Melvin Frazier can do. I still think that in those 20-teamers, 30-teamers, he is a name to look at. He's behind Isaac, behind Awundu, as that third string small forward at the moment. Things can change pretty quickly. I would think that the Magic would want him to take that step ahead of Awundu. I don't really believe in Wes as a strong player, although he has his own level of dynasty appeal. Frazier is a name to pay a marginal level of attention to without getting your hopes overly high. And I don't think that he's got any sort of big numbers or big production or big role coming at any point in the near future. But he is a name to watch in those deeper leagues that they would hope could push into a rotation spot in the next season or two. Not quite there yet, but definitely a name to watch, with Isaac being that real part of it. And the other guy we've got to talk about, of course, is Markel Fultz on this Orlando team. Didn't play a game for Orlando. DJ Augustin has been unbelievably good. So just penciling in Fultz as the starting point guard next season is not wise at this stage, but they're going to give him an opportunity. They are treating him as a top-level prospect. He will absolutely, you would think, no doubt about it, take that backup point guard spot from Jaren Grant, Isaiah Briscoe, who's now been waived, and Michael Carter-Williams, and they'll give him that run. And if he shows that he can play, then he will get that run next to or in place of Augustin, or even take some minutes away from Evan Fournier, who is, while he's solid for this team, is definitely not a long-term piece. And guys like Augustin's 31 years of age, Terrence Ross is 28. There is something there for Fultz. So he is still absolutely a stash to me. You can say his first 2 years were a waste, and they absolutely were, and he's been absolutely shitful in those games. But a point guard who has triple-double potential, who can average a triple-one as well, with steals and blocks being massive, and who was an efficient shooter in Washington. If this surgery did work on him in that thoracic outlet syndrome, we're talking top 50, top 40 guys. So he is that guy that, I don't think many people have given up on, but if they have, if he's on a waiver wire in a dynasty league, he is an absolute automatic add to me, because I think that there is massive potential in Markel Fultz. Still, I haven't given up yet. If it doesn't come good this year, I might give up, but I'm not at this point just yet for Fultz in his journey. The last team in the Southeast Division we want to look at, or the last team left to look at, is the Washington Wizards, of course. It was a disaster of a season for this Wizards team. We had lots of flux. Johnny Wall's going to miss all of next season. Tomas Satoransky is a restricted free agent. His replacement, they have no other point guard coming in the pipeline there. You can talk about Troy Brown, who started over Trevor Ariza. They would be absolutely ridiculously dumb to bring Ariza back to try and stifle that development from Brown. Not that Brown was necessarily really great this year, because he wasn't. He had his struggles, but I liked what Troy Brown can do. And it was a debate between him and the guy I'm going to talk about as their number one dynasty stash, as to which guy I was going to talk about. Brown, you know, had his moments offensively, had his moments defensively, had a couple of strong games to end the season, but of course that's in shit time at the end of the year. Wasn't a negative on the court, which is a positive. You know, of course it is. He was negative 0.2 on off, and that's really strong for a rookie. Yeah, good PIPM as well. Really good stuff there. He can put up numbers when given the chance. When you look at 5 points, 3 rebounds, and 1.5 assists, it doesn't look great. It's only 14 minutes. He can be maybe a 13-point-per-game guy, a 7-8 rebound guy, a 4 or 5.5 assist type player, and 1.5 steals. Blocks might be an issue, but he can be an all-round producer. Think of an Evan Turner type of a guy. That's how I look at Troy Brown, a 6'9 point guard playing small forward who can handle the ball. He is a guy to look at and still hasn't turned 20. So I do like his dynasty upside, but Tom Bryant is the guy that in the next 2 to 3 years at least, I think has the biggest upside. We saw what he could do. We also saw the way that he was mishandled significantly by Scott Brooks. When Dwight Howard went down, he'd come in, he'd play him 19 minutes, get Yan Mihinmi in there getting minutes, and then at the end of the season, he let him loose, and we saw big results from what Bryant can do. Now, he struggles defensively. That's an issue for a center. But the team was better with him on the court versus with him off the court, and that's obviously always a positive thing. He had strong PIPM for a guy of his caliber. He was fourth on this Wizards team. Beal, Satoransky, Porter, and then Bryant. So ahead of Jeff Green, ahead of Ariza, ahead of even John Wall in terms of wins added on this team. So I said wins added, not PIPM. But even in PIPM, it was Beal, it was Porter, and then it was Bryant. So he was third in PIPM on this team, ahead of Satoransky and that, ahead of Wall. So he was really, really impactful. And it didn't really show all season until we got to the end. The last month of the season, 28 minutes a game, 13.5 points, 9 boards, a block, half a three, 59 and 70. Now, Dwight Howard does have a $5 million player option, which seems like very little for Dwight Howard. But who is paying Dwight Howard more than $5 million next season? I would say nobody. So I would think that Howard will come back. But Brooks would be absolutely stupid to play Howard over Bryant. Now, this might limit Bryant's minutes, play him 24 and Howard playing 23 or something like that. But Tom Bryant should be the starting center on this team. He should be getting most of these, majority of the minutes. Now, of course, PunchBob's still in the mix there. I think they let PunchBob go. If someone offers a big offer, I don't see how he fits in. Or they just waive Dwight Howard and have Portis play the backup role to Bryant, which is probably the more realistic or smart situation, depending on how much money they're willing to commit to Bobby Portis. But Bryant is a guy who I think, while he's never going to be the starting center on a good top 4 seed NBA team, the Wizards aren't going to be a top 4 seed NBA team anytime soon. So you might get 3-4 seasons out of Tom Bryant. He's only 21 years of age, of him being a top 80, top 60 guy maybe. You might get 3 years out of him at that level with good advanced numbers. He showed good production in the G League, good advanced numbers there as well. We saw it translate over to the big league. That's always a positive sign. When given the big minutes, he produced the big numbers. So there is that's something we don't see often from the Wizards, to see a couple of decent prospects. But Bryant and Brown, I think both of those guys, Bryant in the next 2-3 years, top 100. I think Brown in 2 years' time could be a top 80 sort of a player. There is upside in both of these guys. So they're the players that I'm really looking at. Yeah, Bryant probably rostered in most leagues. The other guys you could look at, I guess, Devin Robinson. Very hard to get a big idea about him as a two-way guy, but Jordy McRae showed that he could score. He can't do too much more than that. If you're going really deep leagues, it's probably Robinson, but even then, I don't have a huge amount of faith in him as a player. But he did have an absolutely massive summer league, which he looked really good in. Didn't do too much after that in the NBA, but if I have a look at what he was able to produce in the G League, we might get a bit of an idea of what Devin was able to do. He averaged 20 points per game in the 22 games he played for the Capital City Go-Go this year, a steal and a block per game, 8 rebounds, 1.5 assists. He shot 30% from 3, which is a little bit disappointing. But previous to that, he'd been at least a 38% shooter in his two previous G League seasons. Free throws in middling, but he is, that deep league flyer sort of a guy that we didn't get to see much of at NBA level, but what we did see in the G League and his flashes through the NBA caliber play, I thought were okay. So he is at least a name to watch there. That'll wrap it up for some Dynasty Stash options in the Southeast Division. Make sure you're checking out our sponsor Wyze, wyze.com/locked, for those $20 indoor cameras. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_beeble and subscribe to this podcast, Locked On Fantasy Basketball, by using the Himalaya podcast app on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or on Spotify. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Kaminsky.